A badge of honor. Police officers and first responders wear badges to let their communities know they are here to protect and serve. But that's not how it feels today. And the stress of the job is taking its toll, taking lives through suicide and post-traumatic stress injury. A Badge of Honor podcast features the cast of the same name, Sam Horwitz and John Salerno. Sam, John, and the team offer the first responders workshops through their critical incident stress management teams and mental health liaisons to offer state-certified TCOL credit programs that save lives. It's time to smash through the stigma. It's time to heal from your injury, and it's time to back our blue. Welcome to A Badge of Honor podcast. Here are your hosts, Sam Horwitz and John Salerno.
Hey, welcome to A Badge of Honor podcast with John and Sam. Man, if you are in Texas right now, you are feeling the heat. Just a quick PSA, man. Just stay indoors, stay healthy. Man, that heat can really do some damage to not only your physical health, but also your mental health. And don't forget our furry little friends out there, because if you're feeling the heat, they're feeling it triple. Watch their paws and everything else, because Sam's a little dog lover as well as me. And we want to make sure that our furry little friends stay healthy as well. Welcome, Sam. How are you?
Hey, John. Doing great. Hey, you know, I don't know about you. I'm still recovering from Saturday night's big fundraiser that we had. We screened PTSD 911, the movie, out here in Garland. And man, was it a super powerful night. A lot of emotion, a lot of coming together. I mean, the audience, just after it, we had the panel and everybody, it just felt like the whole audience, we just had hugs around each other, like these giant arms, and everybody was in sync. And we can't thank Conrad Weaver enough, first of all, for making this documentary. Again, it's called PTSD 911. You can see this hand, the movie poster right behind me. Hey, if you're listening, it's PTSD 911 movie.com. You can check out the website. You can also watch the trailer, and you can bring it to your city. And you don't have to be a first responder to do that. If you are involved in the mental health field and you really want to present something where it does impact everybody, number one, but you get to a point, John, like you and I have talked about, you tell your story or you explain, if you're a practitioner, everything in the DSM. But to have somebody else do it for you in a full screen movie surround sound experience, it's impactful.
Yeah, you know, and I was talking to Tara about this actually just today. I was like, I feel a little weird. And she's like, what's the matter? And she goes, it's not that I feel off or anything. That brought so much. I don't want the healing aspect of it. It made me look at different things in a different perspective. You know, listening to their stories, and the impact it had on them, and then the resiliency they had to keep going, mm-hmm. right? It really hits you in so many different ways, not only with the post-traumatic stress where you identify with it, it hits you with the humanity. And then it also gets you angry at points, because you feel their pain on the political and the level of not when your department doesn't back you up, or you're just left alone because of the lack of education and awareness that's out there. And we find that so many departments are lacking the education and awareness programs that are needed. And, you know, our panel hit it right on the head. We had the chief of police from Garland up there, who was really a front runner in this, how he runs his department, because he was like, I'm jumping on board on my mental health. I'm going to make sure all my guys are mental health healthy. And he provided a lot into that. So, you know, it's good to see those departments. Then it was really sad to see departments such as I forgot her name, the female in the story.
Yeah, it's Frederick County PD.
Frederick County PD, who really
City of Frederick PD,
which really just hung her out to dry and caused her more pain and trauma than was needed when she.
Agreed. It wasn't just the chief of police and JD, the captain from Garland Fire, but the mayor of Garland was there. The mayor pro tem was there. And they're all aligned. They're all working together to make sure that they get what they need, because as they first responders, that's why we're called first responders. And right. You've got to take care of them and help them continue to learn and build their resilience. And, you know, it's a perfect time to actually go into what the podcast is about tonight, which is responder resilience. And from what the chief of police was talking about to the politicians, it was like, we need to bring more. We have a program, but we need to bring more, because it's about establishing that footing, expanding the resilience for new officers, because just showing up first day on the job, you come with some, but there's a whole lot more to learn. And when it comes to reaching out, it's about grabbing on to everything and anything and evaluating it and see if it fits. And that is why we are bringing on tonight the host of Responder Resilience, fellow podcaster in the space, retired firefighter and EMT, David Dashinger from Connecticut, if I have that right. And David, welcome to the podcast.
Welcome, David.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you, John. Thanks for having me. It's fun to be here with you, being on the other side of the interview.
Yeah.
This is phenomenal. And first of all, you and John have like this whole Long Island thing in common. So before we hit the live button tonight, here's like, Sam's over here. Let the guys from Long Island, you know, they connected over there. But it's all good. Just if you could tell everybody listening and watching, you know, about your background, how you started, how you decided, like, I want to be a first responder. I want to go into the firefighter service.
Sure. Yeah. And I think the seeds for it were planted on Long Island and probably in high school days. I didn't realize it at the time. And I'll just briefly say that the ambulance corps was just starting out in my town, and they had a gas station and like an old Cadillac ambulance. And I
remember that place. Was that off Merrick Road? That was off Merrick Road,
yeah.
Right?
And it was so funky, right? It was like out of a movie. And secondly, I was in the drum and bugle corps for the fire department, but I really didn't feel the pull to be a first responder at that point. It just was like, I happened to, you know, cross paths with it briefly. Fast forward, lived in New York, working in the music business, played at Windows on the World, at the World Trade Center, the top of the World Trade Center with my band. You'll remember looking out over the harbor, seeing the Statue of Liberty, and Governor's Island, and of course, never in my wildest dreams that I think this would all come tumbling down one day. So after 20 years in the city, moved to the suburbs and happened to buy a house right next door to a firehouse. And after I kind of got over the, you know, the concern of, wow, they're going to be going lights and sirens, waking us up at all hours, and it's going to be noisy. Somebody invited me to a barbecue at the firehouse, and I went over, started meeting some guys. They invited me to a drill. I figured it could be interesting. And slowly the bug kind of, you know, crept up on me. And next thing I knew, I was joining the fire department, worked my way up the chain of command, became captain, and also was working in the volunteer ambulance corps. But it still wasn't enough. I was kind of missing something that I kind of knew was on the other side of the career side of doing it. So I tested in Connecticut because I was older. They didn't have age restrictions. And the first town I tested in, got accepted and sent to the fire academy. So here I am, as far as I know, the oldest person to ever go to the Connecticut Fire Academy and, you know, get through it. And came out, started having a good career, got sidelined by cancer for 6 months, came back, and eventually I was able to test and promote to lieutenant, which I never in my wildest dreams thought I would do. But it led me into a whole, I think it was my first, you know, understanding of what the leadership in police, fire, EMS, what their real responsibility is. I mean, yes, we're responsible to the public and to the town and to the agency to do certain things, but we're also responsible to the people that we are there supervising and looking out for. So it was like a crash education. I had no preparation for that piece. I had no training. There was no program in place to kind of give me any kind of pointers. And I saw some people crash and some people go through really hard times, and some of them I missed. You know, I just didn't see the signs. Anyway, got through that piece of my life and retired in exactly 2 years ago. And then I was like, all right, what's next? I think, you know, us as responders, we're kind of wired to be of service and we kind of want to stay connected, stay connected with our community. Yeah. I mean, you know, first responders are the most amazing people, I think, right? So I had met a clinician, mental health clinician, who came to the department with the Fairfield County Trauma Response Team. And they do this, they go around to police and fire departments and do a presentation on mental health, EMDR, and they usually bring a firefighter, police officer, sometimes like a paramedic, to speak to it so first responders will, you know, connect. So I saw that presentation. I met the clinician, and through some calls that kind of stuck with me in a traumatic way, I decided to reach out and get some help with this particular clinician. And then I got acquainted with EMDR and what's all possible with that. Started attending a weekly peer support group with all first responders that was facilitated by two clinicians from this Fairfield County Trauma Response Team. And somehow the idea popped in my head, like, I could do a podcast with these two amazing women and we could talk about, you know, the challenges that first responders are facing and how do we solve them. So that
that is amazing. Hey, we got to go into our first break. I thought this goes fast, because when people tell their stories, it's like, we're on the edge of our seats. What's next? But we will be back. Stay tuned right here.
Move freely, America, without medical restrictions or penalty. Without medical freedom legislation in place, our rights and freedoms are one vote away from being dissolved. Move freely, America, with one voice, without fear of retribution, achieving a common goal, medical freedom. We the people make our voices heard by connecting with state legislators and engaging a constitutionally compliant medical bill of rights for all citizens. Individually, change is improbable, but as an aggregate, attainable. It's time to act with one voice. My voice.
And my voice.
And my voice.
And my voice.
To protect our freedom, creating one voice that cannot be ignored. This requires your voice, too. Move Freely, America. Go to movefreelyamerica.org to find a chapter near you. Plug in, donate, and help our legislators defend our God-given rights under the Constitution. Move Freely, America. My voice.
And my voice.
And together with your voice, we're one voice that cannot be ignored. Donate today. Movefreelyamerica.org.
Hey, welcome back to A Badge of Honor podcast with John and Sam. And I forgot to mention, powered by the OBBM Network. Sorry about that. In our opening, we are here with David Dashinger, right? All right, I got it right. Retired Connecticut Fire Lieutenant. Welcome back. You know, David, I wanted to bring up two points that you made during your opening. Was you joined the department later in life, and you know, you got 21 years in, and the difference between the mental health community in the fire service and the police department back then was almost two separate roads. You know, everybody looked at the fire service, and I look at the fire service as a forgotten child in mental health, because they always thought, well, you have the round table, you have the dinner table, you have those, that brotherhood. But that is so far from the truth when it comes to individuality, you know, because even though you get to speak about jobs and you have that dark sense of humor at the table and everybody kind of just blows it off, it impacts a lot of those guys where they feel that that dark humor or that blowing it off at the kitchen table is enough to heal them. And then when it comes to their retirement or it comes to, you know, a certain point in their lives, they really start to spiral down. So I think it's just about the last 5 or 6 years that we really started noticing the fire service and mental health, and it's really starting to gain some ground.
Yeah, John, you know, I'm totally inspired by some of the things that I get to hear as a podcast host. I'm sure you guys do too. You know, Conrad Weaver's movie is an inspiring thing, and I salute Garland for rolling out the red carpet and supporting that film. And recently I interviewed a guy, fire chief from Harris County, Texas, who basically built a mental health program for his department, including the SOPs, the SOGs, and other documentation, so that he made it easy for firefighters to get help. They had embedded clinicians in the fire station. They had subsidized the cost of the therapy. They made it available to families. And when I hear about stuff like that, it gives me hope that things are turning around, you know, maybe not everywhere right now all at the same time, but things are starting to turn around, and there's some good tools out there. There's people doing some amazing work.
You know, David, I wanted to ask when you were talking about you realized that you needed help and you wanted to talk to the clinicians. They obviously did a phenomenal job coming out and opening that door of trust. Was it easy for you to decide, yeah, I'm just going to ask for help?
I think sometimes we just have to get to the place where the pain and discomfort is, you know, is so much that we're willing to do whatever it takes. And that's kind of where I was at. You know, I tried sucking it up, but I would be laying in bed with this call just circling around in my brain for hours, not sleeping. And so I think it made a big difference to actually see these clinicians in person. You know, sometimes you get a card or you hear about an organization and you don't know, you can't associate the person with the service. In this case, having a clinician come to the firehouse and be culturally competent and show video clips that totally relate to our job gave me a lot more confidence in reaching out and asking for help.
Well, that's great. And like I said, the number one thing, you know, is that trust. Mm-hmm. And you've got to have the cultural competence to, from what clinicians say, you know, handle the first responder stories, because they're not your normal stories. Yes, there are clinicians that are, all they do is trauma. So yeah, are you hearing about, you know, a client that was, you know, sexually abused as a child, or a rape victim or something, a robbery victim held at gunpoint, something like that, where you can make the stretch into first responders, because it's like that first responder may have been the one to respond to that situation. But it's that they're immersed in that traumatic world, and so they have the tools in their arsenal because they've taken the time to do the training. But that's not always the case.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, I think it's more than training. It's being involved with organizations, it's speaking, it's continually kind of evolving your practice and your skill set. And so, you know, I take my two co-hosts, they don't just see patients privately, but they also facilitate the peer support group. They also go out and teach. They do CISM and debriefings after critical incidents. And so they are constantly in touch with the first responder world and the guts of it, like the nitty gritty stuff that the public doesn't really see. They're there and they totally get it. And they're resilient because they're hearing some pretty heavy stuff and they have to be able to do that and still stay healthy.
Yeah, David, let me, I'm going to boast on you a little bit. You're a 2-time Grammy nominated musician, correct?
Yeah, recording engineer. Yep.
Recording engineer. So, you know, you have that creative background, and we discussed this a little bit off air. You have a creative background, as I was commenting on Responder TV's opening and the digital effects that you have through your podcast. I mean, I just, they're beautiful. They're streamlined. You did a wonderful job.
Thank you.
Now, your creativity through your mental health crisis, that did you feel that creativity started to falter? And then is that where you noticed that you were having some issues? Then as soon as you started getting healthy again, you saw that creative aspect come back?
Yeah, I would say, John, to your point, like first responders, a lot of times we are creative, right, in what we do. Setting aside the whole music thing, I work with guys that we go and find, you know, we get into these emergency situations and, you know, you're basically there to solve a problem. And they would find solutions that were, I'd never thought of, right? And they were brilliant. And to me, that's creativity.
Yeah.
And as an officer, you know, one of the things I think we're expected to do is make good decisions. And sometimes if we're getting like pulled down by, you know, cumulative PTS or stuff that's going on at home or emotional distress or addiction or whatever it is, I don't think we're optimal. You know, we're not being optimal in our job, making those decisions and taking care of our people and, you know, doing the best job we can as a first responder.
Do you feel that once you started getting yourself healthy again, that creativity came back?
Yeah, I think it gets you back in the game. It's an energy draw, right? To like not be
a process, and it's also soothing and healing as well. If I mean, talk about drawing, music, podcasts, or just engineering different video clips together. It definitely brings a different level to your mental health healing because you now it's creative. You're putting something. You're getting your mind off the trauma and putting it into something that you can see the end results on.
I would agree. And it's, you know, I see it with other people that have retired. I think in retirement, if we don't have a purpose and a connection to the, you know, to our brothers and sisters, it can be a problem, right? We really go from, you know, 100 miles an hour, adrenaline rush, connected in, hanging out with the, you know, our whatever it is, law enforcement crew or fire crew or EMS crew, all of a sudden, you know, you go and do that last shift and you leave the parking lot and your life is incredibly different from that moment on. So the creativity is key.
I just heard you say it and we heard it at the, PTSD, the movie again, and we heard it at a couple of workshops. You leave the parking lot, you leave your station house, you leave the ambulance bay for the last time. What are the trends? Do you see, like in Connecticut, is there a transition? Is there a retirement transition back into the world? Or is this like, here's your watch, see you later?
Yeah, Connecticut's, you know, kind of every town for themselves. Every town does things differently. But I'd say overall, it's similar in that there is no preparation. There is no plan. You're kind of on your own to get knowledgeable about how pensions work, to figure out what you're going to do financially, what you're going to do, you know, with your life after it's over. You kind of, you know, for the most part, you're on your own. And I think that's an area that needs to be addressed because, you know, we're seeing first responders' health decline dramatically after retirement. You know, typically we don't live as long as the, the average civilian after we retire. And some of that's got to be, you know, the stress and wear and tear of the job, but also the fact when we leave the job, it's a really tough hit to our emotional and, mental wellness.
Yeah,
absolutely. And, you know, we got to take our next break. But when we come back, I want to talk about retirement. And I'll mention something the first day that I had on the job. So we'll be right back, everybody. Stay tuned.
Interested in starting a podcast or TV show? Worried about what you'll say and how to keep it engaging? Think you'd like to be a guest on podcast, radio, or TV shows? Hi, I'm Susan Hamilton, owner and founder of OBBM Network, and I would like to invite you to an OBBM media training to get the tools you need for a relaxed and polished performance you'll be proud to share. Our specialized training techniques include role play, voice training, and everything you need to deliver a confident, clear, and engaging interaction. Go to offbeatbusiness.com. Go to the calendar and register for a training that's convenient for you. Dates available now. 214-714-0495.
Hey, welcome back to A Badge of Honor podcast with John and Sam and our guest, retired Connecticut firefighter, Lieutenant David Dashinger. Hey, how you doing, guys? Welcome back. Sam, when we left, we were talking about retirement. You were going to bring up something about your first day on the job.
Yeah, so I remember this like it was yesterday, because how strange it is. We walk in for our first day on the job in New York, and they're like, make sure you get with the folks about your retirement and setting up all the withdrawals from your paycheck. And we're like, what? Like, this first day, you know? And fast forward with what you just said, David, at the end of your career, it becomes your responsibility. Like, somewhere in between there, you've become an expert from, hey, make sure you meet with, to, I hope you have everything set. And I think as departments evolve and bring in more of, whether it's a yearly mental health check-in or just an open door policy where everybody just is free to talk, or peer support, whatever it looks like, that also has to be the piece of it. Because when you're in the midst of, and you're under so much stress, and some people get to the point of overwhelm, and then we have others that get through it, but then we have others that get clinical diagnosis of, you know, a stress disorder, post-traumatic stress, whatever it is. And no matter where you fall on that spectrum, we all know that the critical thinking part gets affected. So as we move to retirement, it's like, okay, I get it. I've got 8 billion things on my list to do. Oh, and I've got this thing called cumulative PTSD. How about you just drop a rock on top of me, right? So, I mean, if you were to rewind, you know, for you and your department, what would you do differently for somebody's last week to last day?
Yeah, I would rewind even further, Sam. And that's like, you know, start day one, like where you described your first day. It's education, right? I don't know if that has to come from HR, from the union, or from within the department, but we got to kind of educate our new hires, you know, what the arc of the career can look like. But the caveat to that is not every career finishes as planned, right? Some people, something happened. There's a officer-involved shooting that derails a career. There's an injury on the job that derails a career. And then all of a sudden, you know, we haven't even talked about, you know, what the fallback is for that. It's a fascinating topic, so much so we did a two-part documentary on it in the podcast, and had amazing experts speaking about it from all different parts of the profession and all different kind of walks of life. And the bottom line is proactivity, to become your own best sort of, you know, educated consumer, so to speak, about the financial parts, about the health insurance and, you know, impact on your family and what are you going to do with your life when you retire? There's a lot of responsibility. I think we have to take on personal responsibility, because the department and whoever is not necessarily going to do that for us.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned Responder TV. So the documentary, you're much more than a podcast. You put out amazing content, and you can find everything on Responder TV. And when we were talking before we came live, John, I think you mentioned you found it very helpful the way things were, like, almost like a blog. You know, you had categories of everything. Talk a little bit about how, you know, you have this podcast, but how it just grew into a super helpful platform for folks to, like, know about stuff like planning retirement.
Yeah, thanks for that question. It's, you know, it's one of those things, it's ever evolving. I'm sure you guys are seeing the same thing, that we're all collaborating in a way. Like, we wouldn't have a podcast if it wasn't for the amazing guests out there who are willing to come on and share their stories, whether it's in a documentary or just a, you know, conversation like we're having now. And so, you know, what started out is just like an idea, like, how am I going to keep myself occupied in retirement? I just, you know, fortunately met Bonnie and Stacy, who bring to the podcast the mental health piece of it. And they can speak to it from the clinician perspective, but also the fact that Bonnie herself is a first responder. Stacy's, you know, got first responders in her family and military in her family. So, you know, as we kind of go along episode by episode, we are seeing, it's almost like a trajectory of how people come in and tell their story. And then we're blessed to be able to kind of facilitate that. And, you know, in telling the story, somebody out there is going to hear it and identify with it and realize they're not alone, or, you know, there's hope, or there's a tool out there that I didn't ever know about before. So I think that's what's exciting about what you guys are doing and what we're doing.
You know, in your website, and I'm on it now, talk about easy navigation. You know, I'm an idiot when it comes to computers and all that other stuff. To navigate through your website, you've really hit every aspect of it. Like with the episodes, you know, you break it down into, you know, FDNY, 9/11, military, canine, resiliency tools. So you give your viewers a nice choice. Instead of flipping through different podcasts, you can bring them right to a podcast that of their liking, which is something I haven't seen on any other websites. You did a beautiful job with putting this thing together. And, you know, like I said, the format is great. You really bring a new high to an inspiration of people like us, how we can better serve our first responders out there as well.
Well, thanks, John. And, you know, again, it's something that I guess we're all in this together. Right. And so it's wonderful to meet people as we are talking now virtually, and also go to conferences and trainings and meet people in person. And every time we do, like, we're just growing our family, and, you know, we're all just making it a little bit easier to spread the word and help somebody else. So, you know, it feels like an honor to be doing this.
Now, who came up with the name? I got to ask that, because it's a really cool logo too.
Yeah. Good question. So, Stacy has an organization and website, Facebook page called Responder Wellness. And, so as great as that was, I'm like, we want to get close to that, but not, you know, borrow it. So next thing that came up was Responder Resilience. And, so that kind of stuck. And, you know, it's not the most original name in the world, but so far it's working for us.
Well, hey, you know, originality aside, it gets to the point of what you guys do, and it's building. Yeah. You know, we talk about when John and I and Jeff and John, the whole team, we do our workshops. It's a first responder wellness and resiliency workshop. When this is what we're doing, this is what we're going to build. And that's exactly what, when you log on or you listen on your mobile device, you're getting another tool for your toolbox. And like you said it perfectly, we're all in this together. We are one giant team. If it's not David's story, it's not John's story, it's not my story, maybe it's all three of our stories and you're picking different parts out. Whatever you take from the education tool of the day, whatever you're listening to, you know, maybe you're watching a documentary, maybe you're in a workshop or a conference, it's taking all of those and what I like to call is making your recipe for what works for you. Because what works for John in terms of therapy may look completely different for me, you know, as well as for you, David. And I'm sure your guests have shared that as well. And, you know, we're going to come back and talk about your guests and the different things that you guys talk about. We got to do that after we take our next break. We will be right back, everybody.
Hi, welcome to Heroes in Action. I'm Ray Amanat, founder and creator of this training system. I originally made it so that everyone can train for free. We have programs for kids, for women, families, and businesses. I'm an author, speaker, and educator on everything that has to do with violence and bullying prevention education. If you'd like more information about who we are and what our programs are, please go to our website at heroesinaction.us or give me a call if you have any questions at 727-314-2534. We hope to see you here to train.
Hey, welcome back to A Badge Amount of Podcast with John and Sam, powered by the OBBM Network. And our guest today is retired Lieutenant David Dashinger from Connecticut. Welcome back, guys. You know, up to now, we've been talking about the podcasts and how they help our first responders all across the nation and how cross-promotion is probably the best way to heal and get the word out to those who are either uneducated in the field or are just not aware of the resources that are available to them. So these podcasts are very, very important to so many throughout our nation. And Sam, I know you were going to talk about some of the guests that David has had on. And, you know, I'm going to let you take it from there.
Yeah, it is... When you put together your show and you're talking about resilience, I mean, you definitely have your guests that are kind of attuned into the offering that somebody might be looking for, because we can all dangle the carrot with a title, right? But it's what's in the meat of behind the stories. And your guests are just, you know, it's so open and sharing, and at least the episodes that I have listened to, not only do you want to like reach out to that person to find out more, but I found that if they come with a skill set, it's like, hey, maybe I can fit that skill set into what I'm already doing and just be even better. So it's that hope and inspiration. And I think overall, isn't that what we're all trying to offer, is don't give up. Right?
Exactly. Up. Yeah. And it's, you know, what might work for me is not going to necessarily work for you, Sam, or John, but I might resonate with a guest I see on your show and decide to connect with them. And it's like a body of work that we're creating, right? We're, like this country, we have so much choice and there's so much variety, and we're offering that to first responders. Like, okay, if you're in law enforcement and you like this particular guest and they're a coach or they have, you know, something that really like, you know, you resonate with, great. We give, you know, contact information, reach out to them. And I guess that's what it is. You just, you know, there is so much out there, so many tools and so many ways to find you know, health and wellness, whether it's mental or physical. And some of the guests, like, you know, I tear up listening to some of the guests we have because of the humanity and the heart that they have, and they're sharing their stories. I mean, it feels like, you know, I just want to reach out and hug them because they're being so amazing. And it happens, you know, fairly frequently.
You know, I'm looking at one of your guests that we share common with that has had an impact on both me and Sam, and I'm sure you as well, Daniel Sundell. Am I saying his name right? Daniel Sundell?
Yeah.
Yeah. Who was a firefighter paramedic. And, you know, his dad told him, you know, when he was battling and he was having that mental issues, about his creativity and really bringing something back. And his artistic work with the photos and the way he captures first responders so many different ways, he has really impacted the nation, because you see his photos all over the world. And that part is such a healing process for him. And who would ever thought, by doing the way that his creativity in the photos, it's just not a snapshot. He kind of like
he's
layering his own kind of vision on top of a picture, which is a very amazing style,
right? And that impacts so many. I mean, because you see him and you go, you see his photographs and you're like, wow, that is just powerful. You can read right into it. And so many first responders out there have that skill set within inside them, but they don't know how to bring it out. So you hit it on the head where, you know, everybody's a little different, but we all have that same thing inside us to bring out and to give back to the first responder community that we gave our lives to.
Absolutely. I think we're all wired to be of service, you know, whether we're whatever branch we're in and even outside of the job once we retire. And it's really just tapping into that, right? Like, what is your skill set? What's your brilliance? What do you do that, you know, brings you joy or, you know, contentment or, you know, satisfaction? And that's important. I mean, we kind of get into this profession, we're tested, right? They're looking for certain skills. We can rise up through the ranks because we have certain skills. We have this ability to like hyper focus in an emergency and solve problems. We really have to just kind of maybe do a self-assessment, like what are my skills? What do I really love doing? And how can I use that to continue to be of service?
Now, I want to ask you real quick, going back when you were promoted and you realized that you had a traumas going on that you needed to talk about. Did you, were you open with the folks that you were supervising about what was going on?
Yeah, Sam, if I had a time machine, I would do so many things differently. I think I was really in the dark in some ways. I was, I feel like in some ways I wasn't totally prepared to, you know, to be in that position in the sense that I didn't really know how much I needed to be tuned into my guys and maybe to be vulnerable with them. So my I guess image of an officer was like, you know, you got your act together, you know, you don't really spill the beans about anything personal that's going on. And you just, you know, kind of make sure everybody's doing the right thing. If I had that time machine, I'd go back and definitely be more open and willing to share. And I think the culture that I'm seeing in our firehouse is changing that way because now it's becoming more commonly known that guys are going and getting help and it's changing their lives for the better.
Well, that is awesome. We got to take our last quick break. And we will be right back, everybody.
To the Health Engineer Show. I'm Cliff Buchway, the Health Engineer, right here on the Offbeat.
Hi, I'm Larry Cortez.
Hi, my name is Susan Hamilton, and you're watching Offbeat. Hi, this is Doreen Milano. Welcome to Big Ideas Small Business, where we will talk to you very hard dollar.
Hey, welcome back to the Badge of Honor podcast. David, when we left off, you were saying if you had the time machine, you would go back. Sitting in the retirement seat now, let's travel back a little bit and do you think that you would have looked at guys a little differently, not so much on a skill set of firefighting, but on a mental health aspect, going, he's not the same person he was after that call? Or, you know, what would you say to some of the bosses out there now, the lieutenants, the captains, the guys who are in charge? What are some, because they may not be seeing it as well either. They may be, you know, going through their careers with the blinders on. What would you say to them to say, hey, these are the red flags you got to look for?
Yeah, I mean, some of it's like we should be getting some kind of training on, you know, awareness of some of these signs and symptoms of mental health problems or, you know, marriage problems at home or substance abuse. But I think in a really basic sense, now some people I know, this is like, you know, it's natural for them to like sit down and have a conversation with somebody one-on-one and kind of check in and make sure that things are okay in their life. I don't think I did that as best I could, but, you know, I would definitely go back and do it different. I think we really, you know, we sacrifice some of that by being so focused on doing the calls, doing the paperwork, the admin stuff, making sure the fleet is, you know, all the equipment and vehicles are working, hiring the overtime. Sometimes, you know, we don't have time for that extra like conversation with, you know, one of our guys and who might be struggling. And that's something I think we need to do more of.
How do you think that could in the fire service, police department, or, you know, I know we have the peer support groups embedded in a lot of our departments now. Do you think a rank of mental health liaison should be there that is able to see these signs, to be able to connect, to be able to ask those hard questions and bring them further?
Yeah, I think in principle it would be great. Or maybe it's about having a, you know, some kind of checkup once or twice a year with somebody, maybe a, you know, mental health clinician. Certainly the model that I was talking about in Harris, Texas, where there's a clinician embedded in the firehouse, it makes it really easy, not only for the clinician to kind of have an eye on things, but for somebody who's maybe just needs a 5-minute, you know, discussion to help them make a decision or you know, deal with a problem. It makes it super easy. It doesn't require an appointment and it doesn't require, you know, taking time off. So I think there's models like that out there that can help to, you know, to turn the tide a little bit on the mental health challenges that we're facing.
Yeah.
I think, and I think John, you and I have kind of seen that, whether it's a mental health liaison officer or a practitioner embedded, we've kind of seen that go both ways. It's like, well, I don't want to be the guy walking into the office, right? So I think it's the creativity around how departments go about doing that. Like, don't walk into my office, call me on the phone, and then we meet in a neutral spot or something like that. Because I don't know, maybe it's a Texas thing in the departments that we've been,
you know. And Sam, you just brought up a good thing where, you know, nobody wants to say I'm the one that's going into that office or I'm the one that's going to see this. And that's right there alone is what we have to change. We have to make it that every firefighter, every police officer is not scared to say, I'm walking in to get help. We have to break these guys away from the fear of walking into the office, walking into a counselor. You know, we want to be able to have guys see you on the next shift, go, hey, bro, how did the counseling go? You good? You know, you listen, I'm here if you need to talk about it. And that's what we have to strip that fear away and say, I'm going to go see the counselor. I'm going to walk right into his office. You know?
No, don't get me wrong. I agree with you. I'm just saying, let's be a little, we need to be a little, from what you and I have seen from different departments, we're not naming any names, but it could be a little bit more creative.
In terms of,
I'll say location to not having everybody know your stuff.
Right. I know it's
you walk out the door because of, yeah.
There's no one size fits all. It's like, right.
Exactly. That
there's some people
about this thick.
Other people who just, you know, don't seem to mind. But I'm encouraged because there's a guy, when I got on the job, I would say he was about as, you know, far away from embracing mental health support as anybody could be. And recently he said to me, based on some things that had happened recently, that, you know, he could see himself reaching out for help. And that was like, wow, if he's saying that, I think there's, you know, there's hope for all of us. So some of it's the example, right? People see someone else struggling and then go get the help and then make that turnaround. And it starts to set the tone for, you know what, maybe these tools really can help.
They can. And, you know, we did a workshop not too long ago, and you bring up another good point. We did a workshop. We had a law enforcement officer in there, 40 years. We did a family workshop, and his wife was with him. And I don't remember. I think his kids were with him, too, when we were doing this thing. And he opened up, and his wife just turned around and said, you haven't told me any of that in, like, the last 30 years. I've never heard you speak about that. And it was really enlightening to go, man, he gets it. He gets it now. So all those guys who've been chewing on nails and holding on to that toughness, man, it's a relief. It's a pressure relief when you're able to be able to get that out. And you're like, wow, I feel so much better. It's like releasing that little pet cock, right? Blowing off all that steam, you know?
Yeah,
and that's what the podcast, David, your podcast, because when you click on and you listen to the pod, you're like, okay, first of all, you realize it's not just me, that truly you are not alone and somebody else is having the same stuff that I'm having and how they get through it. Oh, well, if they can get through it, I can do it too. And Just like we ask of every guest, you know, what's the best way for people not only to find you guys, but to reach out to you, David?
Well, first, our website is respondertv.com, and all our episodes are up there. We have information on the guests, and it's kind of a one-stop place for all the information on the show. Our email address is info@respondertv.com. And then I'm out there on LinkedIn, and we're also on Facebook, Instagram. And we really love to be, you know, talking to people and seeing who they resonate with, right? With all the different guests and different techniques. So it's really amazing to see what's out there and what's possible. And again, the heart and the generosity of people that are willing to come on our shows to share, to be vulnerable, to like tell their story, and just they just want to help. And that's what this profession's all about.
If there's a first responder out there now that wants to be a guest on your show, they just go to your website and send them an email on their first name. How do they do that?
Right. Yeah, there's you can contact us through the website. We have a process sometimes that we go through to, you know, have a meeting up front with the guest, make sure it's a good fit for the show. But that's the best way. Go to respondertv.com, and there's a contact us form on there.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, David, for coming on, for sharing the podcast with everybody in our land over here. And we hope that you get a lot of folks coming over, listening to the stories, making connection with you, with your guests, because like you said, we are all in this because we come from a heart of service. Let's do this together. Let's heal together. We are one big family, and we can absolutely do it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Again, for joining us tonight. Be safe out there, and we will definitely be in touch.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Sam.
Take care.
Bet. Take care.
You know,
awesome.
Whoops. You know, he and I, like I said, man, I'm looking at his website, and I'm just like, man, it's so easy to navigate. He's got so much information on there, along with his two other co-hosts. Very positive aspect of this. And you know what, if you're a first responder out there, you know, not to take away from ours, because you know, me and David talk about it, it's not a competition. It's right. Where you know, get bits and pieces from everybody, you know, hit every podcast that you can, every first responder podcast that you can, because the information may not all be the same. It may hit you in a different way, or the presenter may be bringing it in a different way where it resonates with you. So I suggest just hit every podcast you can until you find the one that really you enjoy and works for you and resonates with you.
And you know how you remember them? You subscribe.
Yeah.
So it's a no-brainer. So I mean that's what I do. I have all the podcasts in my app. For everybody who tunes in to me and John every Monday, thank you. Thank you for being loyal subscribers. Hey, if you guys like what you're hearing, hit the subscribe button, hit the like button, so that it's a no-brainer. You don't have to think about it. Boom, we're right there on your mobile device. And so when you're alerted when there's a new episode up, and so go ahead and do that. And, you know, follow us on the gram. We're new to the gram. I'm trying to be a good steward of the gram, sharing stuff up there, tagging my partner.
The gram, the gram is that like a new wave thing? The IG, the Instagram.
Yeah, no, that's the gram, baby. That's what I hear. Yeah, it's the gram.
The gram.
So go ahead and follow. We're a Badge of Honor podcast over on Instagram. We have a lot of announcements over there, but we're all over social media, whether it's Facebook, whether it's Twitter, whether it's Getter.
The Facebook.
Having fun doing the G talks. Don't get me started on the F book. You know, I'm going to start dropping F bombs about the F book and what they've been doing to us. I kind of want to see that fight, Elon.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I think Elon Musk is gonna pounce on him.
Yeah.
You know, all he's got to do is actually, you know, Zuckerberg is more like a robot. You know, just unplug him and he'll just, you know, he'll power down.
There you go.
That will be it.
we just, I think we really digress right there. But seriously, follow us all over the different things. Hey, if you're looking for events that we're doing, whether it is our workshop to, exclusive screenings of PTSD 911 to Walk the Bridge, you want to get involved as a first responder supporter, check out our website, abadgeofhonor.com. All of our events are up there. And, you know, it's still crazy out there, John. It's still crazy. And so, you know, start my day just saying a little prayer. Folks, if you're a first responder, just know we are praying for you every single day. The folks that are loyal supporters of first responders, they are praying for you every single day. So thank you for what you do, for keeping us safe right here in our towns, on our home front. To all the veterans out there, thank you for fighting, and please keep fighting. We are here for you as well, because you fought so that we could have the freedom to do a show like this each week for our active duty personnel, keeping us safe across the world. Thank you so much. John, take us home.
I just got to give a big, I just want to promo one thing. On July 22nd is a Ride for Suicide here in Texas. Go to hearmycryfoundation.com, hearmycryfoundation.com, and see how you can support this Ride for Suicide. It's a motorcycle ride going to the lake. There's going to be a lot of vendors and a lot of information, a lot of awareness out there. So go to hearmycry.com. And, you know, you said it all, Sam. I want to thank Conrad Weaver once again for the amazing PTSD 911, the movie. It is impactful, powerful. And if you have a chance to see it, and it's in your area, go see it, because it definitely will change your life. And once again, if there's anything you can do in this world, just please be kind. Peace.
Till next week, everybody. Take care.
A Badge of Honor podcast is produced for the OBBM Network podcast and protected under copyright law. For content permissions, please submit your request to abadgeofhonor.com on the content page. For OBBM Network programming information, please call 214-714-0495 today.